Welcome to the Collector's Corner. I'm your host, Brett Michelson.
Yeah, we'll be back in full effect.
Hello, hello, legions, and welcome. Welcome once again to another exciting episode of the What You've Been Watching podcast. I am your host, the marvelous Mike D, joined as always by my co-host, cohort, and youngest brother.
MD3, Marcus Dudley checking in on the YOU. What is going on out there in podcast land? We are broadcasting live, as always, from the Lake Jackson Studios. Right here, you know, at the What You've Been Watching, I guess it's a Hall of Fame place now at this point.
I mean, official recording studio.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done more here than we have kind of anywhere else, so.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe the old house, but.
Maybe.
Yeah, either way. What's going on with you, though, man?
Man.
It's been a true while since I've seen Michael first.
Yeah, so
full disclosure.
Yeah, pulling back the curtain a little bit, we had the opportunity to bank a couple of episodes so that my dear brother could go take a trip and go see the lovely Miss Angie. So
yes, love you, darling.
Yeah, so we haven't seen each other, man. So you guys are catching up on a real, actual, true What You've Been Watching.
Yeah, man.
The old school style. I've been good, man. We're getting in the busy season and just been working my ass off, but I've been making fairly decent money doing it, so I can't really complain too much. For the first time in a long time, I'm actually not completely strapped for cash. Like, I don't have a lot to mess around with, but at least I'm not having a, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul kind of situation.
Well, hell yeah, I guess busy season will be golf season, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tournament season, kind of like the Masters kicks that off,
and yeah.
Then it just turns into, it'll probably be busy till like late summer when it's just obliteratingly hot and humid as hell.
So next week, probably.
Probably, yeah. Other than that, had a really good all-day outdoors day with the kiddos. We washed the cars, we washed the dogs, we played water balloons, slip and slide, so we were outside for about 5 hours.
Oh, that's a good day.
Yeah.
That's a good day. Anytime they got sweat, you know what I mean, from going aside and maybe getting some sleep that evening, running up. I feel like kids have an infinite amount of energy at times.
Especially these two. Oh, my God, bro. Like, constantly. Even when we went inside, like, me and Liz are wore out. Everybody's sunburnt. We're like, let's sit down and watch a movie. They're literally bouncing off the couch. Like, let's play wrestling. I was like, I've created a monster. Oh, crap.
Yeah, that you must live with in your home now.
I know, right?
You know what's not a monster?
What's not a monster?
Ketsa, always bright. Thank you always, for the lovely, lovely intro music.
Always a banger. Always.
Yeah, so thank you for that. Thank you to MK Dudley Art on Instagram for lovely banner there. And also, if you want to write us in and tell us about your time outside, which we like spending time at the movies, watching the DVDs, but if you want to write us in and tell us what you got going on, you can write us in at whatyabeenwatchingpodcast@gmail.com. Where else can they find us, my brother?
You can find us online at Instagram at whatyabeenwatching or facebook.com/DudleyBrosPodcast. Or we out there in them streets, you know.
What you doing out there?
I was out swimming underneath people at the water park and deflating their floaties.
That'd be cold-blooded, actually. Just watching somebody slow sink, being like, the hell is this? That's kind of funny, actually.
Watching little kids kick their legs in furious.
Yeah, that's funny, actually. It's like taking the backs out of somebody's earrings. Being like, the hell is this? Just the backs.
That's right. Why do only my left shoelaces disappear?
Right. But, yeah, man, so I guess, yeah, I've been out and about, been busy, been sporting eventing.
That's right.
You know, I'm slowly just becoming, I guess, a stereotypical Philadelphia sports guy.
Where you just collect everything and obsess over.
Well, we'll talk about
team.
That a little bit, but I don't know, the more time I spend up there doing sporting events up there, I just like the general vibe, the way they treat sports. I'm like, I can kind of get on board with this, man. I'm a little bit biased, but... And I've been a Braves fan my whole life. Now I'm kind of like, am I a Phillies fan? I also don't really care that much about baseball. Big surprise, but so I know they're a big rival, the Phillies and the Braves. So like, you're not supposed to like both. I think I officially just kind of like both. So yeah, whatever.
A little bi curious.
Yeah, you know, a little ball curious, I guess.
Ball curious.
But yeah, man, we got a lot to get into. We could talk. We could do rapid fire, or we could actually treat this with some earnesty. What do you want to do?
I mean, I got a question for you.
Oh, shit. What's going on?
What you been watching, brother?
We're going to flip it up on y'all. Man.
I know. I know that you wrote down this
okay.
this list of...
We'll get there.
I guess... threw a grenade on everything.
Oh, no, dude. We're good. So, we'll talk about something that I... This is a little teaser for later. I did indeed recreditate myself without it being an anniversary episode.
Uh-oh.
We will talk about that later.
Okay.
And it's a sequel. So we'll talk about that, but that's just a little teaser for later. Something you're going to hear from me again. But I'm going to say some things that I know for a fact we both watched, man. The Righteous Gemstones. I finished that entire series.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and rewatched Vice Principals.
Okay.
Because that's a quick burn. That's just two seasons. Each episode's about 30 minutes. I ran through that in like a day and a half.
Right, right.
And then watched all of seasons 1, 2, and 3 of Righteous Gemstones. And then dove right into season 4 as it completed. Because I waited for the whole thing to be finished.
Yeah,
before
I did too.
So what did you think, man? Because like, I thought the first episode with Bradley Cooper, that should be Emmy nominated. I would hope.
I would hope so. It's weird to think that that episode might be the best episode of the entire series, because it only just barely ties into the main storyline. Like there's nothing about that first episode that you can point to and be like, oh, that's what the series is about, kind of, you know? Like, maybe a little bit of the preacher grifter kind of angle, but even then, you know, by the end he becomes a true believer, so I don't think that the Gemstones are like true grifters.
They do understand that it is a business.
Sure.
That they certainly understand.
Sure.
But it's weird, the Bradley Cooper episodes, season 4, episode 1, it does show, it really comes full circle, which we've mm-hmm. talked about before on the podcast, but it's weird in the sense of the least, I guess, funny episodes
right.
are the intermission episodes, or I think they call them interlude 1,
yeah.
2, 3, and 4,
yep.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Those actually are the most revealing about the family. Not just because of their history, but you find out a way John Goodman works. You find out that the mom still is the glue that holds this family together and
right.
the role that she played in keeping a level head through all this and trying to keep the family somewhat grounded. But those are... I shouldn't say, they're still funny, but those are the like most revealing episodes, and they don't go for the comedic beats quite as much.
Sure, it's more of a storytelling aspect than it is a comedy.
Yeah, which Danny McBride has a phenomenal job of combining drama and comedy in a way that even in Eastbound and Down was the first time I had seen something like that, where mm-hmm. it's like, this can pivot at any point, and tonally
right,
it's
right.
very dark, and it, you know, we talked about Antiheroes last time, where you have a truly... You know, in Kenny Powers, we're talking a guy that is a true anti-hero.
Right.
Just despite himself, you still kind of love and are rooting for him.
right,
despite
right.
him largely being kind of a piece of shit all the way around.
Oh, thoroughly, right.
Yeah. And the Gemstones are the least relatable in the sense of they're just so, like Tom Segura says about Garth Brooks or whatever, where it's like if you were to ask them to go like, hey, can you go to the store and buy me a bottle of whiskey? They might be like, well, how much is whiskey? I don't know, $10,000? They're so removed right. from the day-to-day right. struggles right. of the right. common people that they're preaching to because they've been so secluded in money their whole life that, one, they don't have an appreciation for it.
Right, right.
And two, they just don't know any better without it, especially the young ones. You know,
yeah,
the dad, potentially. The yeah. mom, certainly. The right. passed away mom. But
right, right. They've been breathing such rarefied air for so long that they've lost all connection with the real world and just like... That is one of the things I like about the Gemstones is that in kind of that Always Sunny kind of way, like no matter what, they always end up being bigger assholes than you think that they were in the beginning. They are so wrapped up in their own world that nothing else matters.
No, I agree with that. They also are the cause of the vast majority of their own problems.
Yes, for
you
sure.
You know what I mean? And the greed of the business of expanding it and... vicariously it's exploitation and
right.
you know just kind of go hand in hand. But I was going to say the interlude episodes are funny despite I think the fact in those interlude episodes they cast the children phenomenally.
Yeah, they did.
All the young Gemstones are perfectly cast, and it's
yeah.
really hard to do Edie Patterson Judy Gemstone. Like, she has a way about cranking it up to 11 and having this quiet rage of like, fuck that, I will not be trifled with. And
right,
like,
right.
Taking it to a level.
The little like, mannerisms, the little tics and idiosyncrasies that the kids did. Like, they either just found the right kids, or like, how much time did they have to spend with their adult selves to be like, oh, okay, so every time Adam Devine says a line like this, he raises his eyebrow just a little, or like the way they talk, or that like getting his speech patterns down. And I mean, even the guy who played young Danny McBride, I mean, if you'd have told me that kid was his nephew or his son, I'd be like, I believe it.
Yeah. Which I was going to say, you can tell in the first time they did those episodes in season one, they were doing somewhat of an impression of Danny McBride and the Gemstone kids. Mm-hmm. But by season four, they're kind of their own people a little bit. Like, you can tell that they're still developing into it, but they're not quite doing an impression. It's like, you would be different at that age as a young man than you would be. You're not going to just be the same person when you were 10. It's like, it is a 10-year-old version or a young teenage version of Danny McBride, but it's less of an impression in him being more formative. And you could tell that the kids truly got their hands on the reins of their performance by the end of it, which was awesome to see. Yeah. I really, so shout out to them.
Yeah.
Underrated
performance, I would say, all three of those kids, because every single one of them knocked it out of the park. I was like, oh, that's just young Adam Devine. That's just young Edie Patterson. That's just young Danny McBride. I mean, not only spitting image, but just every little mannerism they did just completely looked exactly like their counterparts.
Right. But I guess let's focus a bit on season four itself, right? Because we've talked 1, 2, 3 before. So, do you want me to just kind of give my overall synopsis first? You want to fire us off, or?
Yeah, I mean, go ahead and start us off. Okay. I'll jump in when you start getting it wrong.
I know, right? What had really happened was, so I liked this season a lot. I will say I was not ready for it to end, but I think it needed to end.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It had run its course.
I think it more went out with a bit of a fizzle than it did a bang.
Mm-hmm. I would also agree.
I thought that, and spoiler alert, if you have not seen Righteous Gemstones by this point, it's probably been out for quite some time. But I thought that they had left the breadcrumbs of Michael Rooker being the boyfriend stalker who was making all these guys disappear. Right. I understand why they did it, because I thought they were either going to pivot to it actually being, Miss Lori, right? I think was her name?
Yes.
John Goodman's new girlfriend.
Right.
Eli Gemstone's new lady friend. Mm-hmm. I thought that actually was going to be her and she had something to do with it, because she did at one point kind of reveal like a little bit like, maybe I think she was just messing with the kids about like, going for the money or whatever.
Right. You don't want to turn me into the evil stepmother like... Yeah. You know, they said something about, anyway.
I mean, yeah, I know your type. You're here to soak up all my daddy's money. And she kind of like was just giving him shit, you realize later. But at the time, I thought they were going to kind of plant a seed of like, maybe she wasn't kidding, or maybe she wasn't just effing with him. But they planted the breadcrumbs of Michael Rooker being the stalker ex the whole time. And I thought they were going to pivot to it being Sean William Scott. It was like, nobody gets to be with my mommy but me kind of thing.
Sure.
I thought that was where they were going to pivot.
Like a twist at the end, yeah.
And I was a little bit, I thought it was a bit predictable when they actually, it was Michael Rooker. Mm-hmm. And at the end, the twist of it being like, oh, well, Sean William Scott's just psycho in his own way because of his dad. And now he wants seven. Like, I didn't buy the hook of him just being a psycho killer.
Yeah.
I didn't mind him going crazy in the fact of, I just saved y'all's life and murdered my dad. And I'm in debt I want to buy this gator farm for $7 million.
You guys are going to buy
it. So you're going to pay it for me, or else there's going to be some real problems here.
Right.
But to shoehorn that in all in one episode and have him flip, I was a little off on it. If it was going to be Michael Rooker the whole time and you weren't going to pivot out of that, then we should have wrapped that up earlier and then introduced him as like him having his own motives, right? Sean William Scott.
Sure, right.
Which I just, it just kind of.
Again, like you said, like nobody can be with mommy or like, you know. Or like his dad's pressuring him in to do it. He doesn't really want to do it, but now he's in too deep, and so now he has to keep the family secret. But like, there was none of that. There was no, it just, him being a psycho killer just like felt really tacked on at the end.
And I love Sean William Scott.
Oh, me too. I mean, he was great, but it just, they introduced an element that didn't go anywhere by
too late.
Yeah, it was just, and also, and it's like, okay, well, we were done. Like, story was told. We could have wrapped that up and moved on. And I got to say, I think it is the very last scenes in that episode, again, I think were kind of a fizzle. I think personally, the way they needed to end it was, how every time his kids are trying to come to him with a problem, it's always, hey, daddy. And all he does is go, oh, fuck. Right?
Whose kids?
John Goodman.
Oh, John Goodman. Goodman.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. Eli Gemstone. Every time his kids come up to him, whether he's fishing or on the boat or whatever.
Yeah, when are you going to grow the up? Yeah.
But the one thing he always says, he always goes, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
So it needed to be, he's talking to Miss Lori, hey, I'm going to sell the gemstone thing or, hand it down to my kids. They can have it. You and me, we're going to go live on the boat, yada, 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 whatever. Kids come running down. Daddy, we got to buy the gator farm. And, I've knocked up this other girl and whatever. And he just goes, ah, fuck. And then just smash cut to, he's casting off lines and just driving away, waving into the sunset as his kids are like, he's coming back. Oh, no, he's coming back. Daddy, you better get back here. We ain't mess with you now, Daddy. You get back here.
Diddy, you're right. No, that would be funny. I mean, I'm trying to not rewrite too much, but I'm very guilty of doing so. That would be a way. I didn't mind him getting his happy ending, though. I didn't mind that Miss Lori came back. I actually kind of like that.
Me too.
But even another thing that fizzled out was the whole team just thing. Just was like, oh, he just walks off set. And right. It was like, that was... I thought what would have been nice is that it got picked up, not for a screen, not for like a TV movie or anything like that. But I thought it was going to be picked up and made into a play or something like that. So then Baby Billy Freeman has his own claim to fame. I thought that would have been nice for the character of him always being this two-bit hustler. And then he finally gets something that he created on his own, which then becomes like this touring play or something like that.
Where
it didn't make it to the screen, but it's written by Baby Billy Freeman, Uncle Baby Billy Freeman.
Starring Baby Freeman.
Or even if he doesn't star in it, he's just, he's accomplished
something. He's going to star in it.
Yeah.
Believe that.
Well, that would get rid of his story arc of going, I need to go be with my family. But then at least he would stand on his own merits outside of the mom, Amy Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I thought that would have been a nice thing. It just kind of fizzled out of going like, oh, they're going to be pissed at me. It cost them this. But Baby Billy's cocaine venture was hilarious. It was just...
Him taking a rip of... First of all, he's hiding behind the gator shack and he goes, Dear Lord, please fuel this cocaine with your Holy Spirit to get me through these next few minutes.
To give me the gas I need to fight these demons.
That's right.
It's so stupid.
And then he rips it from his coke ring and turns around and just screams, Cocaine!
Oh, Uncle Baby Billy.
Oh, I love it. He's so great. Walton Goggins, you are a masterclass, sir.
Yeah, dude, he's the man. I
was going to cast him in Jaws.
There we go.
I would cast him... You know what? I might actually cast him as the mayor. It's a subtle part, but it's a necessary one.
Yeah.
He was out of the shark.
No, maybe.
With them teeth and that big-ass forehead?
Maybe. Yeah, he's the man.
It's not even a fan. It's just his forehead sticking out of the water.
Just gogging up. I can see that. He's a man, though. We're huge fans of him, man. I enjoyed the season. And I was talking to a coworker of mine. We were all kind of... Two of my coworkers were actually on the show as well. And he kind of shared some of the same sentiments of just like... I didn't mind it ending kind of thing. I felt like it had run its course. And I can largely agree with that, but I'm still glad I really took the journey with these characters. And 4, I thought, was not their strongest outing, but again, it still had its moments that reminded me why I like this show so much.
Yeah, I felt it was just a little too, I don't know if truncated is what, just, they knew it was coming to an end and they didn't really have a plan. So they're just like, we'll finish the stuff that we've got and then... We're done.
Yeah, it was just like none of the plots.
It's like you ever put in your 2 weeks notice, and then for that last 2 weeks, you just ain't doing shit.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's like that. Like they all knew the 2 weeks had already been put in, so they're just like, all right, all we got to do is just not get fired.
Yeah, I think that, you can tell just by the social media posts and stuff that all the cast made that they really loved that show. And they're all very big fans of Danny McBride.
Yeah.
And not just lip service kind of thing. Like, you guys are doing something here that's different than any other production we're doing. And like Goggins and even Edie Patterson, who ended up writing a lot for her character, you can tell that there was a lot of trust with Danny McBride and the whole Rough House Pictures production crew that they have of him, Jody Hill, and David Gordon Green.
But I mean, it's all people that they've all worked
with.
Yeah,
yeah. They're big fans of each other, truly. Yeah. And like the whole, just to say that, you can tell that there's a lot of love on set, but I don't know if it was necessarily like, again, I'm glad season four existed, but there was just too many things that just kind of, the top Christ following man thing. I thought that was an interesting story. I thought the rivalry with the Capes and Pistols, I thought they ended that well, of just being like, John Goodman being like, you don't have to get in a pistol fight to death. You can just quit.
Right.
It's like, no. And then them just ending up just quitting and being like, that was mercy I showed you. Remember that.
Right. Fuck this shit. And he just throws down the cloak and the pistol.
Yeah, he says, John Goodman, when I was a boy, fuck this.
He's going to go on this whole like monologue of, yeah.
And they just bail on it, which that one I thought ended very well, but either way. Super glad I took the Gemstones ride. What about you? What are your thoughts on season 4?
For sure. It actually inspired me. You'd mentioned Vice Principals. And I got to say, it's pretty phenomenal. It's very much Danny McBride doing his thing. I don't think it's quite as good as Righteous Gemstones, but it's a very close second. I think... Not that the cast is bad, because it still has Walton Goggins and Edie Patterson and... who's the guy who played BJ?
He's not in Vice Principals, is he?
Yeah, he plays one of the teachers. He's in like one scene, but But anyway, the guy that played BJ in Righteous Gemstones, I think maybe doing that is what allowed them to gel and find the rhythm that they needed for Righteous Gemstones. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. I think also
it's still good. I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm just saying in terms of the way that the characters interact and that the actors work with each other, I think you can really tell a difference in how well they work together in Righteous Gemstones.
Oh yeah, that I definitely agree with. But I was going to say Vice Principal seems like Eastbound and Down was such a hit,
right?
And just kind of garnered a lot of attention. Like, hey, what else do you got? Kind of thing. And it's like, well, that one certainly doesn't overstay its welcome. That one's like, but the effed up stuff they do in Vice Principals is really dark. Like how the depths they're willing to go for their own successes.
They burn a lady's house down, like, and gleefully.
That's like episode 3, I guess.
Yeah.
I love
that Walton Goggins has a file on everybody, and Danny McBride's like, you got a file on everybody? He's like, man, I got a file on you. He's like, keep that file away from me. You better not have a file on me.
Their insults to each other in that show, Vice Principals, are second class to none. The way that Walton Goggins and Danny McBride talk to each other, yes, as their characters.
Yeah.
And then like Walton Goggins, his character tries to make, Lee I think it is, tries to make friends with somebody else, and he starts to rip on him. He's like, stop being such a C word. And he's like, I do not appreciate being called the C word. And he's like, I'm just messing with you. Like, he's like, I miss my friend that I can actually rip on. Like, they just go after each other. And he finally rips back on him, Danny McBride, later. And you just see the sense of relief in his eyes. Much like a Cartman-Kyle situation. How Cartman really loves ripping on Kyle because he actually gives it back to him, situation.
Right. The only one that's willing to stand up to me and my bullshit.
It makes it fun. Otherwise, you just lay down. Or if you're just offended by everything, it's like, took all the wind out of this.
Oh, believe me, I get it.
Yeah. But back to season 4. As we ventured back from Vice Principals, and actually caught some of our train of thought there. Do you have a favorite character in season 4 or just across the show?
I mean, obviously top answer is going to be Baby Billy, Uncle Baby Billy, followed very closely by Keefe.
Keefe is awesome. I wanted more Keefe in season 4. It was not enough Keefe.
How would you even describe Keefe? Like, he's not an idiot man-child, because he is actually very in tune with his own emotions.
He has one of the highest emotional intelligences on the show. And the closest person to actually, I know he's gay in the show, but the two straight man characters are actually BJ and Keefe. You know, because Keefe has real problems that are like, and he's very silly, but like his emotional intelligence is actually pretty high, I think. Or maybe it's so low that it's duping me.
Yeah, I don't know, because like, he's not a bright individual. He's a very enthusiastic individual.
Yes. He just wants to... He's very eager to please.
It's like a Labrador that keeps getting its head caught in the gate. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, oh, I'm so happy to see you. Oh, shit, I'm stuck. Oh, no.
Yeah. No, he's a... like I said, I may be tricked by him. But yeah, I think he's very genuine, though. He feels very indebted to Adam Devine's character, and just the whole Gemstone family. And just, I like that about him, is he tries to not overstep, and he does. He feels very burdened, and then by the end, once he can accept the love that Adam Devine's character shows
Kelvin,
him. Yeah, Kelvin shows him, it's like he can be in the family and not feel that way.
Right.
You know, not feel like I'm less than, not feel like he's actually is a part of it. Much like BJ had to go physically fight another dude to kind of earn everyone's respect and almost die. You know? Yeah, he didn't have to do that. He just had to marry in, and kind of Kelvin was accepted, you know, or accepted by Kelvin and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm with you on that, though. I like Keith.
And then, of course, Uncle Baby Billy is just, he's so over the top and just so larger than life that you can't help. Like, it's almost like watching a science experiment gone awry, you know? Like, what if somebody was just raised on, like, old dance numbers and nostalgia and, like, still thought, like, I still got it. I'm 78 years old, but I still got it. Out there swinging and jiving, baby.
Yeah. His, the meme that you'll see everywhere now, or probably the little, be threaded into every social media thing, is I'm not asking for the world now. I just need $2 million and a bottle of cocaine. That he's so hooked on it that he would just go ask for that openly. Like, and the end of that scene when he asks it, they go, "You think he's on cocaine now?" Yeah, probably. Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Like, he's just so geeked up all the time. Which, cocaine is not funny, children, but damn it, if you're a fictionalized character on television named Uncle Baby Billy, you probably should be on cocaine. A 7-year-old Uncle Baby.
In that case, we give you a free pass. In that case, $2.
Yeah, dude. It's hilarious. That whole sequence. I'm not asking for the world, ma. Just $2 million and an 8-ball.
Like, that's you're going to give it to me now.
You're going to give it to me.
The level of entitlement on this guy. Oh, just, oh, he's so good. Walton Goggins, I cannot stress enough. Like, we talk about the difference between the underrated performance of the week and the Val Kilmer Award. Val Kilmer Award is definitely Uncle Baby Billy in this. Walton Goggins, the underrated performance is the three, like, young Gemstone kids.
Absolutely.
That's the difference.
Walton Goggins was picked up very quick and inducted. He might be our fastest inductee into the Wall of Fame of just, like, this guy's got some traction. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's in. Yeah, he's in. No, yeah, no, there's no questions anymore. This guy's in. So, what do you want to just rate Gemstone Season 4 or just the whole series? What do you want to rate it?
Oh, man.
Well, this is to Season 4 because we've rated other ones and we shan't recant our previous ratings.
There we go. There we go.
A little bit of alliteration in.
I like it. I like it. I am going to give The Righteous Gemstone Season 4 one big-ass water lizard.
I'll give it a Sean William Scott in the Beat It jacket.
That's right.
It's a pretty good rating. Pretty favorable. But you're also like, what? Anyways.
It's worth a watch.
Yeah, definitely. I do recommend the entire series, though, for sure. Well, my guy, what else you been watching?
After that, I saw a little movie. You might have seen it. It made all the money this summer.
Yeah, oh, I think I know where we're going.
Based on the hit franchise, Minecraft.
Ah, yes.
Which I was really, really disappointed because Hitler didn't appear once in this entire... Oh, wait, that was Mein Kampf. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's
like, how are we pivoting out of this one? And what's about to hit the editing room floor? Well done. Yeah, that's in bounds. That's in bounds.
Right, right. No, Minecraft.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha. What'd you think, though?
I didn't get any of the references.
Yeah.
I didn't understand any of the lingo. All of the characters were very foreign to me. But everybody around me seemed like they were having a great time quoting it line for line and losing their shit. So I finally understand what it's like when Dad watches a Marvel movie with us.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I've become my father.
Hey, there you go.
I will say, on a serious note, I've played maybe 6 minutes of the Minecraft game. Like, I get it. Jack Black is amazing in this. If you just want to see Jack Black it up.
Playing blackjack.
Playing blackjack.
Yeah.
In a black jacket.
I know, right? Well, Steve is the only, like, canon character from the game.
Okay, that's more information than I have.
I'm just saying, so, like, you're like, oh, I didn't understand the characters, I didn't understand, like, it doesn't, which I'll not mean to interject, The one thing I like about that movie is none of that mattered to me. Like, it doesn't, it's very popcorn surface level cotton candy kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, but they explain everything. Like, what's up with this weird bush? Like, oh, that's a whatever bush. Like, what's up with these weird people? Those are the villagers. You can't hit them, otherwise you bring in the stone golem. Like, this is all information that's probably going to lead somewhere. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
No, it's...
Well, it kind of does. It kind of does. The stone golem's a little bit, but either way. You were saying that you said Jack Black is phenomenal in this?
Yes. I think he's doing all the Jack Black stuff. You know, the you know, scat singing, like, you know, like he's doing all that stuff.
Lava.
Right.
Chicken.
Right. I mean,
lava. Yeah.
Big cartoon facial expressions, you know, lots of great body work for comedy, you know, pratfalls and tumbles and runnings, and, you know, like... He does ninja moves and actually looks like a badass, you know, like he pulls out some actual Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah.
So
he does. You know, he's pretty well cast in this one. He's asked to be Jack Black at 11, which more on that in a second, but yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I
didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good. I think he does predominantly carry the weight of the movie on his shoulders. I think Jason Momoa does a good job of being the, I guess he's the inept cool guy. Like he thinks he's the shit and he thinks he's all that, but he just constantly fails at everything, and he does a good job in that role. So it's kind of nice to see Jason Momoa taking the piss out of himself a little bit.
Yeah, he's Aquaman if nobody actually gave a shit about Aquaman.
There we go.
Yeah, right. Nobody cares about your superpowers. Right. Go talk to fish.
Ooh, I talk to squids. Ugh.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm pretty cool, but, you know, right. It doesn't matter. Mm. Nobody, you know.
Shut up, Sturgeon boy.
All right. Well, I'll say this. I agree. Everything you said about Jack Black is very well cast. The reason why this movie works is because they ask Jack Black and Jason Momoa to just crank up that, if you imagine them as characters, crank up that hyper-characterized version of yourself to 11. And then just do it.
It is a character of themselves.
Yeah, just do that at 11 the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Right? And it somehow works for almost 2 hours, you know? Because it's certainly carried on them. Like, if you're not a fan of either one of those people, I do not recommend this movie.
Yeah. And the two kids were insufferable. I hated those two kids. Why did they... All they did was take up space. That movie should have just been Jason Momoa and Jack Black running around Minecraft world, getting into adventures and silliness. Why not?
Yeah, they just need people to comment on their silliness is why they exist. And the one... They needed somebody to almost be captured, so it's like there was a lot of different... They just exist because it's like the movie, they just need certain reactions from certain people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they need somebody to be in peril. And Jack Black's explaining the world. Jason Momoa is complicating it the whole time by screwing up the mission. The kid is the wunderkind.
Right,
and the sister's just there. So it's the other lady's just kind of there too. But, you know.
Yeah, there was too many unnecessary... Like, yeah. you needed one expositionary character that, like, they just unload. Like, oh, these are the rules of the world and this is how it works. But instead you have three.
In the Jennifer Coolidge plotline, as much as I love Jennifer Coolidge and welcome her in as many movies as she wants to be in, that plot line with her and the villager went nowhere.
Yeah.
It could have been cut from the movie.
There was no point to that whatsoever. I mean, again, I love me some Jennifer Coolidge, and watching her coo her way through a scene is always pleasurable to me. But
yeah.
Probably could have eliminated about 5 minutes of movie time and just left that on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, it doesn't go anywhere.
It wouldn't have mattered at all. Like,
we got what was going to happen. If they revisited that less often, it would have worked just as fine. Just to be like, he comes into the world, ooh, and then they show him later together. Like, that would, you know, there was a way to cut a fair amount of that, that we knew it was going to happen.
Right, it's like, right. The second she hits him with the car, you're like, I wonder if they're going to fall in love.
Yeah.
Because why not?
Desperate, yeah. To be honest, though, I liked the movie. Again, I don't understand the references whatsoever. Mm. But it's Jared Hess, who wrote and directed Napoleon Dynamite.
Right.
And Nacho Libre, and a very underrated movie starring the Wall of Famer Sam Rockwell, which if you have not seen, is called Gentleman Bronco.
Okay.
It is very funny and super silly, and it's a super underrated Sam Rockwell performance as he plays the same character twice, written by two different authors. And one is very effeminate, and the other one's like a super badass.
Interesting.
Really underrated Sammy Rockwell movie.
That's a great elevator pitch. I actually want to see that.
Yeah, and it's...
But I love me some Sammy Rockwell.
It's also got, what's the guy, Jermaine Clement? From Flight of the Conchords.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I do know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's all Jared Hess. And so Jared Hess has a very signature, dry, super like, Napoleon Dynamite is the most successful independent movie of all time. It got so much that like the actors had to threaten to sue the movie company because they couldn't hide the money anymore.
Right,
like,
right.
We did this for like $100.
Right.
And on like
right. $100 and a ham sandwich.
On like a $5,000 budget. And this has gone, how many DVDs has this sold? How many times has it been played on network? Like they couldn't hide the money anymore. So they're like, how many Vote for Pedro's shirts were sold?
Pay no attention to the swollen closet full of money.
Right, this Scrooge McDuck gold coin vault labeled Napoleon Dynamite Revenue. Pay no attention to that. So, I say all that to say, just to familiarize that have not seen Minecraft, it's that very dry style of just very silly humor.
It is very absurdist, but there is a dryness to it. It's like Monty Python meets like Fawlty Towers or something like that.
Yeah,
you know
I
what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know what Fawlty Towers is. I'm going to take your word on that one.
It's another John Cleese series. Yeah. But it's like Golden Girls meets Monty Python, like that very dry, sardonic, cackling humor mixed with just wild things happening in the world.
Right, like in Napoleon Dynamite, but I could throw this pork chop or this steak over those mountains or whatever. Right. Watch this, and it's just somebody gets hit in the face with a steak, and somehow that's like the funniest shit some other people on the planet have ever seen. So the movie kind of is better than all of the sum of its parts.
I would agree.
If you look at it all individually, it's a C movie, which made all the money in the world. Fucking shattered some box office records.
I mean, literally saved the summer of movies.
Yeah, it's back on track. So, I mean, but were you in a theater that had the chicken jockey people freaking out?
Okay.
Did you hear about that at all?
I have seen that online, and quite frankly, I'm okay with that if it's understood that everybody in the theater is going to be participating. Like, if you want to go to a midnight showing of Rocky Horror Picture Show and throw rice and bread and squirt guns and everybody chants whatever at the screen, that's fine. But if there's little kids in there and there's, you know, like families, like if you're going to a 5 o'clock showing on a Friday night, probably don't be a dick. Like, maybe keep that one for yourselves and come back at a later date, you know? But so I say all that to say, when we sat down, we had some like older high school, kind of young college age kids sit down next to us, and they had all brought Minecraft blankets and little plushies and stuff. And the whole time I'm just thinking, like, if one of these assholes hits one of these kids with a soda, I'm going to jail tonight. I am going to punch somebody because that is unacceptable behavior. Fortunately, they didn't do anything too wild. They definitely lost their minds when Chicken Jockey showed up and they were quoting the movie line for line. But I've done that.
Like,
I've been to many a Kevin Smith movie and just recited line for line. That's fine. I no problems with that. A-okay. So thankfully, nobody stepped out of line and I didn't have to like bring in nunchucks and Indian burns and stuff.
Right,
so, and
bolos.
Bolos, right. Ninja stars.
Yeah, I think
bring them my Highlander katana and start claiming to be the one.
Assembling it. Either way. It is weird that they assemble that with that sword with screws and stuff, and it's like such a stable broadsword. Like, no way, dude.
Talking about the curving blade?
Yeah. Like, get out of here. I do find the whole chicken jockey thing to be incredibly interesting, as I just find it cool what gets traction and what doesn't.
Right.
Because what happened is the studio, it surpassed any expectation they ever had.
Oh, and we're getting a Minecraft 2, we're getting a Minecraft 3.
Well, like any projections of like, hey, what are we going to do? How's it going to look this weekend? It blew all of those out of the water. But the issue is that it's a social media thing that got traction. And I find it hilarious, A, that what actually gains traction in the world of like, hey, we're going to make this a thing, and what doesn't. And what is also hilarious is watching studios try to like fabricate that, and it can't be anything other than authentic.
Right.
Much like Barbenheimer was a thing. Everyone was like, let's do the Barbenheimer this weekend, and it became this cultural, and that got traction. Yet other people have tried to simulate that. They tried to do it again with like Morbius after the trailers. They tried to be like, oh, you can hate watch this movie with us after it wasn't doing that well.
Right.
And it's like, you can't phone that in. And so to watch out of touch execs try to do that or try to start like a trend on social media.
Why is it's Morbin time trending right now? Yeah. We should look into that.
Right. And then they try to do something like that. It's nonsense. And then this chicken jockey thing hits, which I didn't know anything about. I find it, again, it's cool. I find it whatever, have fun. But If I didn't know going into it, I would probably be pissed off because I'm getting to be an old man. We're chicken jockeying out. But I'm also not opposed to people having their fun.
No, no, again, but I think that there's a time and a place for that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's like there was a big trend of when people would go and see Wicked. Like, they would just start singing the show tunes along and, like, I mean, that's okay if it's a sing-along showing, but, like, if I'm seeing that movie for the first time in the theater, I don't want to hear the chorus around me. I want to hear the actors and the artists on the screen sing their song. And so, like, if you want to go sing along and sing quietly to yourself, that's one thing. But, you know, you get these late-stage theater kids that just can't let go. And
your people?
Yeah, my people, you know, who start, you know, like, let it go, you know, that, like, that, or whatever, you know, like, I'm flying, I'm soaring so high, like, come on, you are not the show here, like, sit the fuck down, eat your popcorn, if you want to sing quietly to your neighbor, that's fine, or go to a sing-along, go to, you know, yeah. Follow the bouncing ball movie show, you know, like, there's a time and a place, and just the trend of the whole trashing the theater at the sight of the chicken jockey, like, you're an asshole. Unless you physically are going to stay there and help that employee sweep up that floor and pick all the popcorn kernels out of the seats and scrub all the soda out of the carpet, you're an asshole. Like, it's one thing to make a mess. It's another thing to expect other people to pick up your mess. Especially, like, these kids are working for what? Minimum wage? They're just trying to go the fuck home or, like, set up in between shows so they can bring in more people and have to do it all over again. Like, come on, man. Don't do that to these people. Don't do it.
Yeah, it's... The movie theaters dealt with it because they...
Like, needed, financially?
Yeah, I mean, they dealt with it because it was like, oh, well, we kind of need the money. But, yeah, it was... Then they started doing special chicken jockey showings of it.
Well, but that's
which,
like,
is fine. Which, yeah. But again, I'm all about, like, cultural phenomenons taking place and be a part of that's cool. But yeah, it's just sometimes, like, I haven't seen the movie yet. Can we just...
Right, right. But even, like, the studios paying for it financially, that's like going to a restaurant being an asshole to the waiter the entire time and then being like, well, I tipped them well. Like, well...
Right.
You put a price on being an asshole to that person at that point.
No, I agree. Like, that's a great analogy.
That's not your price to make. You know what I mean? Like, that's they should be the one to be like, hey, great. You know, anyway, whatever. Like, just because you financially compensated them doesn't mean it was worth their time, effort, or mental state.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean like this. I don't mean like the studios paid for it. I just mean like movie theaters themselves started advertising a special chicken jockey showing so people could have a place to go act like a buffoon, knowing ahead of time, which those tickets were more. But again, like you were saying, what's the price?
Right, so, right, right.
But yeah, no, I just wanted to hear your thoughts on the cultural phenomenon that was.
Highly entertaining movie. It moves at such a brisk pace. I mean, every 2 minutes, there's something else happening. So
yeah.
Even if you don't understand it, you can just sit back and be like, okay, cool, they're flying now. All right, cool, jetpacks. We're doing a jetpack scene. All right, cool, minecarts. Let's do this.
Right. Know? No, I'm with you on that. I didn't... Which, to be honest with you, I find... shout out to Angie's son. He was the first one that, like, really... showed me Minecraft back in the day. I find the game to be fascinating. It's a giant, like, Lego block, and you get your imagination can run wild, and it's so cool. I genuinely am very fascinated by the world of Minecraft and what people can build, and they have whole squadrons of people that can, like, have built a server that is every bit of New York, every building, every fire escape.
Like,
every,
accurate.
Accurate. Right. It's wild, and
right.
I just...
Right.
That, to me, is incredibly fascinating.
Or literally building whole worlds of, like...
Just, you know, your imagination.
Yeah.
Just,
I built Asgard. I built the Fortress of Solitude. I built, you know, whatever. You know, Camelot, you know. And everything's interactive, and all the doors work, and there's just... It's this vast, like, you... It just goes on and on and on forever. Like, this digital landscape of wonderment.
Yeah. So the fact that they could take and... There is a plot to the game. There's a survival mode kind of thing. But ultimately, just like how a Lego movie worked, like, it's a movie about bricks. It's a movie about really anybody can play Minecraft vastly different than any other person.
Right. Anything you can imagine, you can build.
Yeah,
you
know? And it's like Steve is this canon character, and there are canon things that have happened in DLCs and adventures that they can put you on in single player mode. But largely, this pull of the game is... what's in your brain. So the fact that a movie that is your imagination hit at that level of $200 something million in the opening weekend, it's like,
What do you want to build today? You know,
yeah.
Let's build a $240 billion franchise. How about that?
It just goes to show how big video games truly are.
I don't know if it's $240 billion, but probably not that far off.
You said how much?
$240 billion.
Oh, yeah, dude. They're estimating the budget alone of Grand Theft Auto 6 being close to $1 billion. So in order for it to cost a bill, you know what I mean? It's the rumor is that it's going to cost all the money in the world. They're going to make it back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They're going to make it. So Minecraft has been one of the highest selling games in the top 25 for 10 years now, probably, or whenever it came out.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably give or longer. Take, yeah. Probably longer. It's made all the money.
So their coffers are not hurting is what you're telling
me. Right. They had indeed have a Scrooge McDuck style vibe. So... what do you want to rate it? Then you want to keep talking Minecraft, or again, it's if you like Jason Momoa and Jack Black, it's just them cranked up to 11 in a very silly world with silly songs, and even the way he says things like "Sizzaline," it's right. Very Jables, very Jables.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to give it one set of diamond armor. I don't know what that means, but apparently it's pretty good.
Yeah. I'll give it three stabs of a dying pig trying to trick you.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I thought it was a funny
scene. You're just going to hit me with a knife, aren't you? No.
Come here. Ah, knife. Secret knife. Another knife. Yeah. So this is, again, very silly scene, but it's kind of lasted, so.
I did like the one joke that they said when they were like, oh, he's got the orb, and it's very clearly a cube, and he's like, you guys don't work on like rounded edges, do you? Like, the orb!
Yeah, the orb cube of you. Yeah, well, they definitely play with blocks.
They keep saying, what are they, the hell pigs keep calling them, oh, the roundlings.
Yeah, the roundlings, yeah. Yeah. A lot of geometry-based jokes in there, yeah, really, you know. And on that note, let us take a break from our sponsor. Our sponsor is our ever-changing interests.
It's a really good one.
Squirrel! We'll be right back. Currently, I'm into jerseys. But you're like, Marcus, you were already into jerseys. This time it's hockey jerseys.
That's right. That's right. I've been collecting little tchotchkes and toys that make me smile. I just got the Alan Adale Funko Pop, the singing rooster from the Disney Robin Hood.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. That's a good pickup, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Trinkets. Anyways, that was like a full ad read. Anyways. All right. Do we want to recreditate ourselves now?
Please.
All right. I did it, ladies and gentlemen.
You finally.
I'm going to give you a guess. It was not Titanic. So what else have I not been credited with?
Let's see. You still haven't seen Heavy Metal.
I have seen that.
Oh, you have? I'm sorry.
No, I'll get. Yeah, it's Gladiator.
Oh, good. Thanks for killing the suspense.
Yeah, sorry. No,
I was all a Twitter.
I know. Now, I did finally see Gladiator, though.
Okay.
I saw it on a plane. I started watching Godfather 2 and was like, if this plane gets rocky, you actually got to pay attention to this movie. So, thank goodness it was a smooth flight, but I didn't really want to watch it. So I switched over to Gladiator.
Okay. Answer me this. Are you not entertained?
I was entertained.
Okay.
Yes, it is an entertaining movie, and I'm not going to... Okay, so here we go. My name being Marcus, since that movie came out, I've been called Marcus Aurelius probably 40,000 times, which doesn't bother me. Strong handle. It's whatever. I take, it's like somebody was Leon, I'd probably call him Leon Phelps. You know what I mean? It's no disrespect. I don't take anything by it.
Leon the professional.
Yeah, I just was like, is that the ninny dude who Joaquin Phoenix plays? Like, no, that's the dad. He's a cool dude. I'm like, oh, well, I can accept it then. It's a strong handle. I'll take Marcus.
Sure. Plays. That was,
I don't know.
Dumbledore, whatever that guy
is. Yeah. So, that being said, every time when it was first came out, Marcus Aurelius, oh, I haven't seen Gladiator yet. It wasn't a big deal. Oh, you really should. However, that movie came out 25 years ago now.
Right.
And still to this day, when I tell people that I do a podcast or they find out I do a podcast, or sometimes I'm not going to lie, I just shamelessly self-promote the fact that I do a podcast, and then they come to find out that I have not seen the movie Gladiator, I have heard the phrase, "You haven't seen Gladiator? Mm-hmm. That's crazy." I've probably heard that a minimum of 1,000 times.
Sure.
And I'm probably, if I'm exaggerating, it probably isn't off by that much. But yeah, it's been several times. So I finally decided that I would recredit myself by watching that film.
Okay. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts. That ended up winning, if I remember correctly, Russell Crowe won Best Actor that Academy Award season.
Yes, sir.
I believe Ridley Scott won Best Director.
No, Steven Soderbergh did, if I'm saying it right.
Soderbergh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
For...
which I found out recently. I thought it was for Traffic, but I didn't realize he directed Aaron Brockovich and released it the same year as well.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So Traffic and Aaron Brockovich within a calendar year. I'm sure one of them got filmed ahead of time, but they released the same year, which are two widely different or vastly different movies.
Yeah.
Kind of shows the range, which his filmography is just impressive just in the swings he takes and how different everything is. He doesn't usually do the same thing twice outside of the Oceans franchise.
But even then, I mean, if you want a tight spy thriller with an all-star cast, like,
yeah, he's having
you can't
a lot
beat
of fun.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he won that, but yeah, Russell Crowe did win Best Actor over Tom Hanks and Castaway and a couple other
people. That was that year.
Yeah.
I would have sworn Castaway came out like a year later or so.
Yeah, I thought so too, but I was wrong. I thought Tom Hanks won it for that, but either way. So all that being said, it did win Best Picture, which we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
But my initial reaction to the movie, let me try to say this without... for lack of a better term, if I remove the years of quote-unquote hype that the movie has garnered by going, oh, that movie's awesome. Oh, dude, you got to see it. So if I remove all of that as best as I can, I was somewhat still underwhelmed by the movie. And then again, me being underwhelmed, people take that as going, oh, that means it's bad. Or it's like if you say something is overrated. Overrated can mean that you think it sucks. Sometimes you just think it's overrated, right?
Sure.
If I think it's a B and it's been widely regarded as an A, it doesn't mean it's a bad movie. It's just like, it's a bit overrated, right?
Yeah.
So I would say it did not live up to the proverbial hype.
Okay.
I thought that it was going to be far more epic and than what it was.
And epic was, in what sense?
It's just a bigger in scale, and I didn't realize it was much smaller, more intimate. It's a very small group of gladiators. I thought it was going to be like this all-out war of like, we're taking back, and maybe that was just...
like a kumite or something like
that.
Oh,
no, not even that. Just like they were going to overthrow Rome by via gladiatorial combat or something like that, which, again, that was just what little bit I knew about.
There's an interesting movie called Spartacus you should look into.
Yeah, I should, right? Yeah.
It's very good, but it's very gay.
Yeah, it happens. So is 300. So yeah, I was a little bit underwhelmed by it. I didn't... To focus on the Best Picture aspect of it, knowing that it won Best Picture, knowing that it got all those Academy Awards, I'm not saying it's undeserving of all of them, but I will say it should not have won Best Picture. I was not overly moved. I thought it was a good movie. I wasn't like wowed, but like, wow, this is life-altering. This is something I've never... considering the fact that it went up against Traffic, which I thought I would not be mad if that won Best Picture.
It was a little heavy-handed for me.
Which I'll give you that one. But the fact that it lost Best Picture to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is just not... that does not...
oh, the fact that it went over?
Yeah, that it went over on that movie. Yeah, which you said, and I'll never forget this, we were watching the Oscars that night, and you kind of had your predictions in. You said, I don't think Aaron Brockovich should win, which was also another movie that was nominated for Best Picture, because it was, for lack of a better word, a chick flick. And you said, I don't think, well, or that it was a stereotypical
kind it's stereotypical girl power, like women can do anything, which is okay. I'm not saying a bad story, but just it did kind of hit all the same beats.
And you said, I don't think Gladiator should win because I think it's just a burly dude movie.
For all the same reasons.
Yeah, again, not bad, but, and you said Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon would thread the needle. And for whatever reason, I remember you saying that back in the day, and I thought it was actually spot on, because I thought Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon became, later on, became almost like a nexus being of movies. It became that reference point for an elevator pitch, where if you're like, can you describe Jet Li's hero? You're like, it's kind of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon-ish. If you describe House of Flying Daggers.
Or Curse of the Golden Flower.
Yeah, whatever it may be. It's kind of Crouching Tiger. It changed the face of not only Chinese cinema, but how we view martial arts flicks.
Right.
How we view sweeping epics of things like that. And artistry and cinematography and wire work. It became a pivotal point in all of those. And so I had never seen anything like that before, me personally.
Well, you had seen the seeds of that before, because essentially what Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is it's just the Shaw Brothers wire work and the grand, like almost magical scale of these martial arts movies in terms of like tapping into martial arts unleashes these supernatural powers or this otherworldly sort of presence, this otherworldly sort of capabilities. And it just took all that basic wire work and the mythology of tapping into something greater than yourself through your own dedication, your own studies. And then you pair it with this almost Shakespearean or like Sun Tzu, like mythological,
like fantasy almost.
Fantasy, yeah. It
I would agree with about 95% of what you just said. I still would say I hadn't seen anything like that. I'll agree that when you said the seeds of a Shaw Brother movie, I can get on board with that.
Sure.
If kung fu flicks are beef, I have never seen this Wagyu before. You know what I mean?
Like,
to me, so I hear what you're saying, though.
I just mean that Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon was the evolutionary leap in that type of movie.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
You had that movie, and then this movie elevated to such a level that it almost could not be ignored, even on a global scale. I mean, like you said, that became the elevator pitch or the crux point of any type of like, well, it's like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon meets like Dragnet. Whatever the pitch is, like that was your reference point.
And you and I were invested in this particular series of Oscars, and this is now we're just telling a story about us watching the Oscars, but we were invested in that because
that is what we call 2020 in memory.
Yeah. But you and I were particularly invested because we were like, is a kung fu flick about to win Best Picture?
Yeah.
It should.
Being like, super excited about it.
Yeah. Like, is this is a foreign film? Like, it was going to be groundbreaking in that. And so I say all that to bring it back to the Gladiator pitch of, I'm certainly not mad that it won any Oscars because it is a good movie and is worthy of it. I'm not going to take it away from that. But I will say I did find it to be somewhat predictable. And maybe it's predictable because people have copied the Gladiator formula. But I thought some of the action was fairly choppy. There were some badass scenes when the tigers were jumping out of the pits on the chains, like, and the guy had the fold-down mask. Like, that's a really cool scene.
Yeah,
I'm not going to sit there and say, like, for me to just trash this movie would be stupid. But I am going to pick nits in terms of why I got to it, me thinking it's a bit overrated.
Okay. Yeah.
And not living up to the hype.
That's a fair assumption. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a bit choppy. And
especially looking retrospectively in terms of it's been built up in terms of like, you have to. And then you go, did I really need to?
And then I saw it. I'm like, well, I saw something better that year.
Sure.
Now that I've seen it all the way through, like, well, I already saw a movie that was better that year. In my honest to God opinion, I'll still stand by that. So, I don't know. The performances were fine. Accents kind of get all over the place. I felt bad for Joaquin Phoenix's character, as he did just want to be loved. But, like, I thought the sister was, quite frankly, just a bitch. And she was a bitch to Joaquin.
Connie Nielsen?
Yeah, which she was a bitch to Joaquin Phoenix, I get, because he was a bit spoiled and thought that the throne was just going to be his just because.
Cool. And also...
Hang on. That he wants to sleep with her, and that's his sister. And that
and
he
she
wants
was like, no, we're good.
But... I'm supposed to like her when apparently she's been an asshole to Russell Crowe, whose like wife just got crucified and had terrible things happen to her, and all of a sudden it's like, we used to have a fling, and she just tries to cash those chips in, when it's like, how about you stop your brother from trying to fucking kill me right. instead of trying to seduce me, dude? Like, your time can be better spent. Like, if you have this thing for me, help me out a little bit. Don't just use me to try to manipulate the throne being, you know, what is it, abjugated or whatever?
Abdicated.
Yeah, I know what I was trying to go for.
Right.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, does not pass the Bechdel test, kind of?
No. And I just, she wasn't that likable. I didn't think even, I felt bad for her in the sense of her brother's a bit of a psycho.
Yeah.
Like, you are, I think, she's like, drink this tonic. Is that implied that she's, like, poisoning him this whole time as well? I don't know. I didn't Google gladiator theories, but that's what I walked away with. I didn't think she was that likable of a character. And it's, and I'm that's supposed fair. To, like, she's using a slave to, like, rid her brother, but it's not for like altruistic reasons. Maybe it is, maybe the ends justify the means, but it felt like there was a far more direct path you could go to if this dude just wanted to go home. And now he's like, I just want to kill what's his name.
He doesn't Commodus. Care. Commodus.
And it's like, the second he does that anyways, there's no, I don't know, maybe there's some Roman law that's like, if you kill the emperor in battle, you just get to be that. Like, she had a son that's a royal blood. It's not going to this dude.
Well, bear that in mind, because I got some things to discuss about that.
Okay. Well, yeah, but even then, it was like, he's supposed to just, oh, well, Marcus Aurelius told me we were really close, and he said that he wanted me to be king. Well, he's dead, so that didn't...
Right.
It just didn't...
No rite of passage, or no, like, no script that says, like, oh, by the way, the last will and testament of Marcus Aurelius that's going to wrap this nice thing up. It's just like, oh, you just killed our emperor, you're a slave, so, like... Nothing changes, just...
And, like, the fact that he's supposed to be this renowned general, and then it's like, oh, he's a slave because we say so. Like, no... It felt like there was also only, like, three fights that happened before he, like, galvanized the entirety of Rome. Right. To like, which maybe it's because they're so effing bored that they're like, dude that was fighting in the minor leagues, have you heard about this Spaniard? Which, Russell Crowe, the Spaniard? Sure.
Why not?
Sure. Okay. And then all of a sudden, it's like three fights later, he's like, we shall galvanize. Like, hold up.
Maybe. Are you saying he does not have gladiator powers?
They should have casted Antonio Banderas and his eagle powers. Yes, jeez. So, yeah, it was just plot things I kind of bumped up against.
Okay.
But I get the appeal of the movie. Again, I didn't walk away going, I was dog shit. Watching it 25 years too late, trying to act like I'm on some high horse, which I've done plenty of other times. I'm sure you can pull the tape of me doing it. Yeah.
So this is different how?
Yeah, I know, right? But, yeah, just, am I off kilter on that, or?
No, I think you're right. It is very formulaic. I think that one of the reasons why that movie won the year that it did is because there were so many other just heavy-handed movies that I think, for whatever reason, they were trying to infuse a little bit of fun back into the Oscars, or like, hey, like, sometimes the most popular movie can win, and it doesn't necessarily have to go to the one that's the most...
Boy, they got rid of that philosophy.
Yeah, because people went, the Gladiator? Why the fuck? Yeah. Should have been Aaron Brockovich. It should have been Castaway. It should have been Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. They're like, okay, never mind. Avengers, you're never going to win.
Yeah. Yeah, that's maybe true. Yeah. You might be onto something there.
So...
Yeah, I don't know. I just, it was fun to watch on the flight and everything, and I'm glad I did. It's just Joaquin Phoenix's character, again, I felt a little bit bad for him, because he did just truly want to be embraced by his dad. He's like, I could do all the things that that he did. He certainly, and some of it was validated. He just has this need to be liked by everyone. He's like, I'll give you the thumbs up if that's what the crowd wants. I'll give you the thumbs down if that's what the crowd wants. Like, yeah, I'm your guy. And it's like, the whole time he's about to disband the Senate and everything, which even that plot thread, I guess, was, he's like, it shall be a free Rome and no more emperors. It's like a weird thing to say as you go. Right, you know what I mean? Like,
and you're going to enforce this.
You could make that declaration right now, my dude. But he's like, oh, how shall I be remembered? You could have been remembered as the dude that on his deathbed was like, free Rome, let's give it back to the Senate.
That's right.
Or the, you know, make it the Republic again, whatever. So
Wu-Tang's for the people.
Wu-Tang. Blah, blah, blah. Right. So I'm trying to take that at face value. There was still some really cool scenes. You can see why it was so popular, but again, I
mean, it's beautifully shot. You have to admit that Ridley Scott does a good job of putting everything in this movie looks great. Like from the details in his armor to the details of Rome, just the background actors. Yeah, it relies a little bit too heavily on the CGI. I'll freely admit that, but it at least looks good.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's costume design and set design, like all that's top notch. Mm-hmm. That's quality filmmaking right there. I just wish that we knew a better way of shooting slow motion or something like that. I've got to figure out what the camera trick is so I can refer to it by name moving forward. But it's a trick that they use all the time. They use it a bunch in The Matrix Resurrections. They do it in this movie sometimes too. It's like this weird kind of slow-mo, like shot with a slow handy cam kind of look.
Right.
And I don't know what the name of that camera trick is, but they do it a little too much. But again, at that time,
a slow handy.
Hey, look, I'll point this all. Yeah, upload some of those to show people what I'm referring to. So when we say slow handy, they'll know what actually is we're talking about.
No, Google it yourself.
Yeah, Google it yourself. But I think it wasn't overused at that point.
Right.
You know, so I'm trying to not stack this as like people have hyped this movie and they said it was this. I'm trying to remove that to give it the honest thing. So. Glad I watched it. We'll just say, but
glad I watched it.
Glad I watched it. Be the review. Good one. Thank you for shoehorning that in there for me. But still, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I had never seen anything like that. So
yeah, I have you seen any desire to see the sequel at all?
I mean, if it's on, it took me 25 years to watch the first one, so I'm not exactly a diehard of the franchise.
So see you guys in 2050 for Marcus's review of Gladiator 2.
That's crazy that it really did. When you say it like that, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Oh, don't worry. I'll be dead long before then.
Yeah. I shouldn't laugh at that, but. So, yeah.
So, speaking of Gladiator 2.
Well done.
Ham-fisted transition.
Yeah, we see the ham in the microwave. Just give it to us, right?
So, saw something recently.
Was it of Roman combat?
There was definitely Roman numerals in there. Okay, yeah. Glad E-E-H-er.
Nice. Yeah.
It was pretty much all the things that you saw at fault with the first movie, I have with the second movie, but even more so.
Is Denzel good in it, though?
Yes, in the same way that Joaquin Phoenix was just chewing the scenery in the first one, Denzel was just like, oh, I just got to be an erudite asshole and just, I mean, chewing up scenery and swallowing it whole. So basically it takes place, I want to say 15 years after the original Gladiator, and it's a continuation of, you know, slave turned gladiator turned leader turned revolutionary. But it all seems like they're trying to hit the same beats in the same measure so that it feels forced. It feels like they're trying to recapture lightning in a bottle, and it doesn't really work.
They're like, we don't respect you as an audience.
A little bit. So spoiler alert.
Just go ahead. It's taking 25 years to watch.
It all hinges on this big reveal that happens about halfway through the movie. The problem is we as the viewing audience see it happen. So in the first movie, you remember the little kid that was the daughter of the Connie Nielsen character, Lucian?
Oh, that was the son, I thought.
Yeah, I'm sorry, the son. Yes. What did I say, daughter?
Yeah.
The son of
yeah, the one that I was just saying should be. Yeah, gotcha.
Right, who now emperorship should pass on to him since Commodus died.
Yeah.
Well, he basically runs away and, spoiler alert, ends up growing up as this other character named Hanno in, I want to say, Nubia or Namibia or something like that, one of the African countries. And gets, again, captured during battle, taken to Rome, turned into a gladiator. And then halfway through the movie, it's revealed when the first time he goes into the Colosseum and his mother sees him, has this moment of like, oh my God, that looks like my long lost boy. And then goes down to talk to him, and he kind of plays around like, I don't know who your son is, but I guarantee you he's not the man you see before him. And turns out it is. He just wants to disavow any of his heritage and grow as a regular man in the Roman Empire, free from Roman influence. But we all see it coming. And so when he's finally revealed as the heir apparent of the Roman Empire, it's like, well, great. So now we're going to pivot into like him trying to take the throne, right? No, just disavows it the entire time, gets roped into a random battle again with the emperor, wins it.
Oh, same really? Beats.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The only twist is now this time, instead of one emperor, there's twin emperors, and they're both equally, like, one is very sexually driven and one is very violence driven.
Is it Pedro Pascal?
And... No. He plays Connie Nielsen's new husband.
Okay.
Acrisius, who is, again, he's sort of the Russell Crowe character if he had never been turned into a gladiator. Like, he's this world-renowned general if he wanted to, could kind of take over the Senate and claim the emperorship, and in a roundabout way gets roped into doing that. It never goes anywhere. The plot gets squashed almost as soon as it starts, and so then there's no point to it.
Right.
So I don't know what they were trying to do with it. And then it pivots into Hanno realizing that he's the heir apparent and should be emperor, but he doesn't want to do it, but he wants to bring in his true father's legacy, which, oh my God, shocker, turns out Marcus Aurelius was his real father because he and his mother had a fling one time.
That's kind of weird.
And again, it's just shoehorned into like, oh, by the way, I saw my dad in the arena one time, so that inspired me to become the world's best player.
Oh, wait, you said Marcus Aurelius?
No, I'm sorry, not Marcus Aurelius.
Oh, that was her dad.
Maximus Decimus.
Oh, yeah, I already kind of saw that.
Yeah, Maximus Decimus.
See, I thought that in the first movie. I didn't bring it up previously, but yeah.
Yeah, the Russell Crowe character is,
yeah.
Spoiler alert, you are the father.
Is the naval battle school, though? I saw that was in the trailer.
I mean, yes and no. It does open up the arena in terms of there's a lot more variety of battles. They're all CGI schlock fests. I mean, there's a dude who rides a rhino, and their big move is we'll just move out of the way, and it'll run into a wall.
It's like every video game I've ever played.
Pretty much, yeah. Jesus. Yeah, there's a naval battle where there's these huge ships and they're making these big turns and they're firing arrows at each other, and then they'll do an over, like a top shot, like an overview shot of the Colosseum, and it's just two ships on like taking up either side of the Colosseum, and there's no way that they could maneuver the way that they have been.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. And then there's sharks in the water and people are getting thrown overboard and the sharks are immediately there just nom 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 nom. And like,
well done, well done.
I mean, like, doesn't matter wherever they are, there are sharks directly beneath them.
And they are hungry.
And of course,
super pissed off sea bass with freaking lasers on their head. Right.
It's a shock, man. It is
a shock. Does Statham show up? No.
He does not. He does not. He should have. He should have. But yeah, it's just, they're trying to hit all the same beats. It kind of fizzles out. It ends with the Hanno character facing Denzel Washington's character in the River Rubicon, the river that separates Rome, and it's this whole like analogy of Caesar recrossing the river and claiming his throne, but it doesn't really work. And then he just decides not to be emperor and like turns it over to the Republic, and the army's like, I guess we'll follow that for now. So. Sure, who's in charge? Well, we're going to hold a vote.
Yeah, no power vacuum there at all.
Exactly, exactly. Meanwhile, they've established the entire time that, like, oh, it's the bourgeoisie and the people that own, like, pay for the gladiators and pay for the games and pay for, you know, like, all the owners of Rome that actually have the real power. So what have you really changed other than same masters, different title?
Seems like they tried to take some more thematic swings in this one, maybe, but it's still kind of played out. I just didn't know, even just after watching, before I even saw Gladiator 1, I didn't know if there was, Gladiator 2 was a story that needed to be told.
I agree.
And that was, before I even saw it, I was like, does it need to be told from just what little bit of understanding I have? Like,
and they literally open the movie with the last 5 minutes of Gladiator, like him fighting Commodus in the arena is how they end the movie, and then him dying and walking through the wheat fields and stuff. And then they just smash cut to like Gladiator 2, like, okay, so we just saw that so we could be tied in. Like, trust me, it ties in somehow. Believe me.
Right. Oh, man.
We're not just feeding you a same recycled shit with a different name.
Previously on ER.
Right.
No, I get it. Well, because I know a lot of people were pushing for Denzel to get Oscar nominated for that role. Is that...
He's good, but he's doing way over the top stuff. And quite frankly, he's only in the movie out of a 2 hours and 40 minutes movie. He's probably in the movie for about 8 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's pivotal roles. Like they make use of him, but he's not in the movie for long.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that might be why then. Maybe they can make up for it by robbing him of Malcolm X with all that screen time that he had there. Anyways. Trying to balance the scales a little bit.
King Kong ain't got shit on me.
Yeah. But Ridley Scott directed this one too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's an all-timer, man. Like, whether you...
Well, actually, no, I'm sorry. I know he produced it. I don't know that he directed. I could be wrong on that.
Not take the time to Google it.
That's right. Something you figure it out.
Do at home, but yeah. So would you recommend it, though, or just kind of... I mean, me, I'm probably not going to watch it, to be honest with you. And if I do, it'll be because it's just on and we can't decide what to watch.
It's hard to recommend because it's not so great, again, that it's life-changing. You're like, oh, my God, I'm so glad I saw that. Honestly, if it was a little bit shorter, I would absolutely recommend it. But 2 hours and 40 minutes, there's a lot of downtime. There's a lot of stuff that they don't need. A lot of tertiary characters get introduced, and then they never go anywhere. Like, they introduce this, like, medicine man healer that kind of drops some solid advice on the main character, but really he's just there to reference stuff that happened in the previous movie. So
he's the spiritual guy, yeah, the guide through it all.
But not even really. I mean, it's just like, oh, remember when that happened? Yep, sure do.
Sure do. Let me regale you with the tale
of
25 years ago.
Right. So it's, I don't know, it's... If you're a completionist or if you really just want something mindless that you can put on the background and not really have to pay attention to, like they'll reiterate the main points over and over and over and over again. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to give it not necessarily a thumbs down, but I can't bring myself to give it a thumbs up. I'll give it a meddling meh.
The most honest review given yet. Oh, man. Well, dude, it's been a pleasure.
It has been. Yeah.
Yeah.
Been an actual catching up what you've been watching, in the truest of fashions.
Yeah, we got y'all can't see this, but there's a laundry list of movies in front of me that
we'll be diving into.
Yeah, so we'll be talking, probably by the time this comes out, we'll have crowned a Stanley Cup champion, so I'll be talking about that.
Oh, we also have, coming up, we're going to declare our official... What you been watching, Bracket Busters Champion.
Yes, which before we get off, that is on me. I left town for 6 weeks and I left some of the handwritten brackets here in town. And so that is completely on me. I apologize. We will get those out ASAP and I will get them graded. That is entirely on me. And
point is, someone has a fantastic prize package coming their way.
A super rad prize coming their way.
Investors, sure. Could be you.
Possibly you. Oh, man, what a great way to go. On that note, man, I appreciate you doing this with me, brother.
Always.
To everyone out there, we recommend that you go watch a movie.
And talk about it with somebody that you love.